I mean, the conversations about hair that I've been having with non-Black women have been wild and so interesting, of what people are Googling and didn't know. And I mean, I didn't write this book to teach necessarily. I'm happy and so happy that these kind of conversations about workplace inclusivity, all of those things are happening. But I was really just writing it for that kind of blurred in me who loved Insecure when it came out and loved all the different kinds of Black people that I was seeing in Insecure and Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl and Key and Peele, all of those things. So I'm just excited for this to present 4, 5, 6 different ways to be a Black person in this world. Like, we are not homogenous. We are so different.
Hello there, everyone. I'm Celeste Headlee. Welcome to Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. I'm so excited for this episode. It's a replay of a really extraordinary session from the 2022 California Conference for Women last month, featuring two incredible people who are blazing trails for women and girls around the globe. Zakiya Dalila Harris, the best-selling author of The Other Black Girl, and Laisha Ward, the EVP and Chief External Engagement Officer for Target, the national lifestyle sponsor of the Conferences for Women. In this conversation, Laisha gets up close and personal with Zakiya to talk about her debut best-selling novel, Navigating the Workplace as a Woman of Color, and how we can create a greater sense of belonging at work and just in life. I'm so excited to sit back and listen with all of you. So let's get started.
I'm so excited to speak with best-selling author Zakiya Dalila Harris. If you've ever been the only woman on a team or the only person like you in a meeting, then you know the challenges of workplace isolation and underrepresentation, and the importance of creating more equitable opportunities. Zakiya knows what it's like to be the only. And rather than keep quiet about workplace racism and isolation, she wrote a best-selling novel that is being adapted into an episodic series for Hulu as well. Zakiya, I'm thrilled you're here. Welcome. Great to have you with us today.
I'm so excited to be here, Laisha. Thank you so much.
I am a huge fan, and I'm really excited to be in conversation with you today. So let's jump in.
Sounds great.
Your book, The Other Black Girl, which I love, by the way, pulled back the curtain on the experience of Black women in the workplace. And it's a topic that affects me personally, having been the first, the only, or one of a few my entire life. So for those who haven't had the pleasure of reading your book yet, would you tell us about the story and what led you to write it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I can say I can very much relate to being the only, which is really where this story came from. But yeah, so The Other Black Girl in a nutshell is about a young Black woman named Mella Rogers, who's been the only Black person working at Wagner Books for the last 2 years. So as the only Black person, she has to deal with a lot on her own. So she's really excited when another Black woman named Hazel starts working next to her. But it's not all hair braiding and fun times, of course. And strange things start to happen in the office, and Nella starts to wonder about Hazel's true intentions. And there are a few other Black women as well who are also tied to the world of publishing, who are all navigating being the onlys in the field. And so yeah, as I mentioned, the story really comes from my own experiences. The immediate event that really sent me to my desk while I was working in book publishing to write this, though, was being in the bathroom, washing my hands at work, Penguin Random House, and another Black woman came out of the bathroom stall. And I was like, who is this woman? Because, you know, we do this. We count all the other Black people in the room, in the space, out of safety, out of XYZ. And so, you know, I have that moment where it's like, oh, this is awesome. And I can be very shy. So I kind of tried to make eye contact with her in the bathroom, kind of wanted to see what's up, be like, we're here. And there was just, I gave her the look. Yeah, the nod, right? The nod. And I didn't get anything back. And there was nothing, there was no yearning. I know. But then, you know, I mean, I go back and I'm like, well, it was the bathroom. It's the morning. Like, it's corporate. But those thoughts going through my head turned into, why was I so desperate and thirsty for this friendship? Like, why did I think this might turn into something? And I went back to my desk and I started writing this book about these two Black women who are in this very white space and things are expected to go a certain way and then they don't.
Right. Wow. Incredible. And I can relate to what you were talking about, right? The nod. I would just call that good home training, right? Like acknowledging that I see you and not having someone respond to that would sort of shake me a bit as well. But that turned into something quite extraordinary for you, which ultimately is this phenomenal book that you have graced us with that I hope everyone takes the opportunity to read. Okay, so going from being the only one to not the only one is really central to Nella's story. And in the book, you explore friendship and expectations of friendship among Black women and how predominantly white industries and spaces influence those dynamics. So tell us more about that.
Absolutely. I mean, I have to really go back into my own experiences of being an only one because it really felt, there are these two sides of it, right? Of being able to walk that walk, talk that talk. I was raised in a particularly white neighborhood in Connecticut. Didn't really have Black friends for a while as a young person. Similarly to Nella, there'll be a lot of similarities in this conversation you'll see between me and my protagonist. And so once Nella gets to this space where she's the only one, she feels very proud because she's been able to kind of climb over that wall to get this position because it's very hard to get any kind of job in publishing, especially as a young Black person. You have to know the right people, all of those things. And so for Nella to get there, she feels this, you know, sense of pride and like, I earned this. But of course, being the only one, she's craving that kind of contact with someone like Hazel. And so when Hazel gets there, she expects, you know, for them to speak the same language. Like, I'm here, you're here. We must have had to climb over the same hurdles. We must have the same kind of partner. We must have the same beliefs when it comes to what's best for Black people. But that pressure is not just internal. It's something that's impressed upon us by outside people. There are, of course, like different things we say to each other depending on where we are and who's around us, who's listening. And in the world of publishing, those eyes just feel so strong on Nella as she's navigating this friendship with Hazel that at first she thinks she wants, she knows she wants it because again, she's craving that. But then there's something strange about Hazel that doesn't quite align with her. And she feels guilty for not necessarily being excited about Hazel's presence. And a lot of that comes from, again, this pressure for us to always be one active, what's the word? So sorry, I'm like using the word.
I think there's this expectation that we are all the same, right? And
exactly.
We're not monolithic, right? No people
yes.
are monolithic. And I think you do an incredible job of showing the unique side that we all have, even within the context of a community or a race or a gender. And I think it's so powerful. You know, now your two main characters, in fact, Nella and Hazel, they represent really different approaches to tackling racism and isolation in the workplace. And one is very direct and the other is more subtle. So what are the pros and cons of each that you explore in the book?
Yeah, well, so Nell and Hazel really came from my own kind of thinking about, and this is something that not only I think about, that all Black people think about, I think all the time, of what's the best way for us to succeed. And so Nella, of course, moves through the system. She's agreeable. She's kind. She doesn't want anyone to dislike her. And the pros of that is that once she's able to climb that ladder, she's able to say, like, I did this. Like, I put my sweat, my blood, my time into this. Like, this is what, you know, I know for me personally, relatives that I've had who've worked in these kind of spaces who had to say yes agreeably, so that we, our generation, can push the envelope a little bit more. Like all the people who came before her, Nella's honoring those people who worked hard and kept their head down. But of course, the cons are that it's exhausting. It's so exhausting.
I feel like I should say amen right there. It's exhausting.
Yes. I just sighed as I said it too. I was just thinking about like 2020 and thinking about 2015 every day. Really, of seeing what's happening in the world, on the news, and having to then go to work the next day, having to be happy and pretend to be happy as though the world is not sometimes just terrible. And that kind of pressure for Nella, someone like Nella who just wants to like kick butt at everything at work all the time, it's something that's just really wearing down her. We also see how it affects her friendships, her outside life, as she's being pulled more into this kind of competition with people at work. The Hazel's approach, I won't give too much away, but the point of Hazel's approach is that she seems happier. She just seems like she's been able to let go of that kind of pain, exhaustion, in a way that Nella can't, for various reasons. But the cons of Hazel's day are that they don't leave you feeling as proud. The thing about, and this is something that I don't even have decided yet, I didn't want to answer this question in this book, but is suffering and is adversity inherent to the Black experience? Is that what makes us Black culturally? So all of those things are things that I'm always constantly thinking about. And
okay, I think you're tapping into another book here, right? Like this
sort of
struggle that leads to our grit and resilience and grace. I think you're onto something there that think we could continue to dive into. You know, I really appreciate your perspective, and I know that our community here will as well. You know, I found that the need to be either direct or subtle actually varies based on the situation or the circumstance. And it's just good to have different tools in our toolkit that we can apply as appropriate based on the situation or circumstance that we're going through in that moment or at our varying life stages. And I think that's really what's useful for us to think about. It's not often either or. There are and situations that require different approaches based on what's coming at us and what we want to give in that moment.
Right. Exactly. It's all gradient.
It is. Your lived experience clearly informed this book. And you've said that when you were working as an editorial assistant, you dreamt of being the first Black female editor. But ultimately, you decided to leave the publishing house. So what was the decision-making process that led you to leave to pursue your dream?
Oh, I can trace that back also to a moment where I'd been there for about 2 years and I'd been promoted to assistant editor, which was a big deal because that was the trajectory for me that I had hoped when I first started there. And I remember one of my bosses giving me a book to work on that would just be my own book. And it was a very important book, you know, would have been a very good one for me to work on. I would have learned so much. But I remember getting that news that I would be leading the charge on my own book and then going back to my desk and crying. And a lot happened at my desk, clearly. It's like where I lived, my cubicle.
More about what led to this cry moment, because was it a good cry or a bad cry?
It was a realization that if I took this path, I would not have time to work on my own writing. I had started working in publishing because I've always wanted to be a writer. Like that's where I started off when I was 5 or 6. My dad's a writer, my older sister is a writer, like loved it. But I also knew that's hard and I did an MFA program, then led to this job in publishing. And I was really excited about that idea of being the Black editor, but also it's hard. It's like we said, it's exhausting. And I just knew that, I'll also add that this book I was going to work on was not by a Black writer. And there are just so many factors about being in that space that I loved, but also did not love at all. And I think knowing that, you know, every time another assistant left, every time someone left, the person who filled that space 9 times out of 10 was a white person or someone who was already connected to the world of publishing is very insular, which then, of course, just where everyone's talking in this bubble of experience that's, you know, everyone does not necessarily experience outside of that bubble. And it's very white.
And instead of feeling like you belong, you felt like an other in many ways, like you didn't belong and you weren't included.
I didn't, because that's the thing. That's the strange thing about it. Having grown up where I did and having been so used to being in those kinds of spaces, I did feel like I belonged. But then there were moments where it was like, and this wasn't just me, to be fair, it was also other like entry-level employees, white young people like my age, where it'd be like, how is this happening? Like, are we living in 1955? Like, that kind of thing. And then, of course, sensitivity reads would sometimes come up. That question of who's heard of this writer? Who's heard of this celebrity? When it's like, obviously, like I have, but a lot of the, you know, white older people have not. So a lot of it was like this weird thing of feeling like I belonged and then realizing like, wait, but not quite. Like you're the path of the house at the time was just not going necessarily where I wanted to go. So that absolutely contributed to it as well. And then I also had the idea for this book right around that time that I mentioned when I was crying at my desk. And so a lot of those things really just culminated in me deciding to put in my notice like a couple months after I started the book. And my mom was like, what about insurance? It's like,
mom's doing what moms do and what dads do and what your community, they just wanted to make sure that you were successful and healthy and happy and safe and that you had insurance.
Totally. Exactly. Exactly. And now my mom, of course, is very happy.
Very happy. Your mom has always been, your parents have always been proud of you, I have no doubt. And you are living out your dream and manifesting that in so many extraordinary ways. But I think, you know, many of us feel like we belong everywhere and nowhere at the same time. And so those tensions can exist in the same space. And so it's
absolutely,
I think, really inspiring and illustrative what's possible when we hear your story. And your unique story really reminds us that we all have a story to write and to live and to share. So thank you for sharing that. It's really inspiring. On another level, you also explore the psychological impact of racism and isolation throughout your book. For example, you portray microaggressions in thought-provoking ways. And, you know, I'm often struck that microaggressions might imply that small aggressions are really inconsequential. And, you know, spoiler alert, they're not, right? And your book really suggests that there is a great deal more weight and heft to the negative impact of microaggression. So how do we help people who underestimate the impact of microaggressions and what they can say and do and what they shouldn't say and do?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about microaggressions that is really important to understand is that they can be so hard to put your finger on. Like that scene where Nella's trying to explain to her white author, like, why there's something problematic about this Black character he wrote in this book. Like, sometimes it can be a feeling, and people just need to trust that feeling. Like, it is something that you feel. It's something that is very specific to different people. Like, we are not all, of course, homogenous when it comes to what affects us, what triggers us. So that's another thing to take into consideration. Some people can tolerate more or feel differently about different things. And yeah, just the horror of microaggressions too. I mean, a big part of what inspired this book for me just creatively was Get Out and how it was able to really comment on well-meaning white people in a way that I don't feel like people were really talking about yet when it came out. And I really just wanted to look at that from the publishing angle of what it's like to be this young Black woman who's listening to your two middle-aged white bosses talk about vacation homes and basically how much money they make and you don't make, or, you know, having your name misspelled or mispronounced constantly by people who work with you and should know you. All of those kinds of things, they differ again by different people, for different people, and they just matter so much to address. And frankly, not everyone's comfortable calling people out on them either. So that's another thing. If you have a work environment, you know, that is like Wagner Books and, like, you know, unfortunately, a lot of corporate industries, you have to have spaces where people feel comfortable really talking about these things in meaningful, impactful ways.
Absolutely. I think, you know, I often refer to being uncomfortable. And if you get comfortable being uncomfortable, you're often willing to have really courageous conversations. And those courageous conversations, hopefully, that are built on trust and an environment where people are willing to learn and suspend judgment and truly move into a conversation, ideally, it opens up a lot of learning and growth for everyone. And I do think sometimes people are afraid of saying the wrong thing, so they say nothing instead, or they just keep saying the things that they've always said, because to your point, no one's been willing to educate them and exactly. Bring them along the journey. And when there are power dynamics at work, that can be difficult to do. But ideally, we're all beginning to open up conversations and be in a culture that allows us to be on that learning journey together.
Yeah. And hopefully, I mean, I've heard a lot about, you know, how Black people are really preferring to work from home now because they feel more comfortable there than in those actual workplaces, which is a shame. But I also hope it means that I think everyone's at home right now, or not everyone, but a lot of people are. And maybe that'll help break down the walls even further of all of us, like just talking to one another in this way could do a lot. But
we all want to be in a culture where we have psychological safety, where we feel like we are seen, right? Like, I see you, I value you, I respect you.
Yeah.
For all of who you are and what you bring, and that we're not trying to create a narrative that is comfortable.
Exactly.
As opposed to the one that is actually representative of who we are. And I think your book is opening up a conversation that will help us all as we make progress on that journey of equity, right? And, you know, there is a lot in your book about code switching, which is widely thought of as changing how you speak and act to navigate environments that are really dominated by majority culture, which is a tension in all candor that I've experienced my entire life and career. And there's a psychological cost to this as well. So let's dive into that a bit and talk about the impact of code switching and what we can do about that as well.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot too, and really wanted to have these kinds of conversations about it, because I don't necessarily think it's always negative. You know, I do think, like, I mean, selling out is definitely negative, but I think some people have
a selling out is negative, period.
Yeah. But the line between those things can be so fine, you know? And so I think that everyone changes the way that they speak and act depending on where they are, who they're around. But when it's for a reason like, oh, my job will not accept me, that's why I can't wear my hair like this to work. That's why I can't say this kind of thing at work. That's where it gets not good. And, you know, I really wanted to also play with, I mean, again, going back to where I'm from, I got comments like, I talk like a white girl in high school all the time.
I've heard you saying for many years, and all of the ways in which I talk represent who I am. I am all of those things. And so, you know, it's interesting how people will try to say, I'm not Black enough, or I act too white. You know, I am who I am. I'm still certainly in the process of becoming, but people can't sort of define us and put us in boxes that make them feel safer or more comfortable, which is, you know, not their right.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, same. And I think often too about my own kind of code switching and like, am I code switching when I'm around Black people? Or like I'm so crazy thinking about those things. And like you said, at the end of the day, we're all just amalgamations of all the pieces that we've picked up. And but again, making sure that the reasons why we're doing it are coming from just, I want to be, or not even I want to be, I'm actively being, just I am multiple selves. I can be this way. And also if that part comes into work, it should be okay. And that's where, again, it becomes complicated. And hopefully, ideally, I think it's the beginning of companies like publishing houses and other corporate spaces starting from scratch and really looking at who they're hiring, making environments feel more inclusive, not just like visually, but actually doing the work of making sure these environments feel comfortable enough where people don't feel like they need to do those kinds of things.
And they can be their authentic selves, right? Because
exactly.
The culture and values are being lived every day and people can show up as their full selves and
yes.
feel valued and respected and have the opportunity to not only be hired, but to yeah. be developed and promoted and advanced in ways that allow them to be the very best versions of themselves that they can be, quite frankly.
Yes. Yes.
That's the goal.
You're listening to a conversation with the instant New York Times bestselling author Zakiya Dalila-Harris and Laysha Ward, the EVP and Chief External Engagement Officer for Target, the national lifestyle sponsor of the Conferences for Women. If you enjoy this podcast, you know how we grow it? When you rate it and review it on whatever platform you use to listen. Your recommendation will help more women just like you hear from incredible Conference for Women speakers year-round, no cost. And if you need a little bit more inspiration and uplift, head on over to conferencesforwomen.org and click the subscribe button. Our monthly newsletters are filled with lots of tips and insights, inspiration, all kind of things that help you succeed both in your personal life and at work. So go to conferencesforwomen.org/subscribe. And now let's get back to the conversation.
Okay. Girl, we have to talk about hair.
Yes.
Yes.
Our hair has long been a subject of conversation and debate. And in fact, I did an article recently about my personal hair journey on LinkedIn called The Crown that really created a lot of discussion and buzz. So I'm really curious to hear what inspired you to make hair such a significant part of your book.
Yeah, first of all, I loved your hair journey. I'm also tender-headed, so I was like, yes.
You read the article, The Crown?
Yes, I did. I did.
And I loved it because
I hadn't been in the corporate sphere for very long before writing this book. Really, publishing was my biggest kind of splash. But I've had my own similar journey of really figuring out what works for me. I really wanted to have straight hair when I was 9 or 8 or 9 or whatever. Beyonce was like doing the, she had the straight, like blonde, blonde hair. Ashanti, I love talking about hair. I loved your piece on your hair journey because I am also tender-headed. It's a blessing and a curse, mostly a curse. But I have so many memories, just early memories of myself really not loving my natural hair. I really wanted to have straight hair, ponytails. I remember drawing little pictures of me with ponytails because that's what all my white friends had.
Why did you want that versus natural hair?
Yeah, I mean, it seems so much more manageable. That was the thing. Like, I hated that my mom always had to do my hair because like that was just something that she would do. And so now, of course, I'm like, still learning. I have a natural 6 years now, but like I really wasn't doing my own natural hair and I wanted to be able to just get out of bed, put it back. I was playing sports and stuff, all those things. And I also wanted, makeover time would come. All my friends would be doing each other's hair. My parents were like, don't let them touch your hair. So I mean, of course, like good parents. And I was just like sitting in the corner though, and it's been a journey. And it got to the point where 2015, 2016 happened. I moved to the city for my MFA. Eric Garner, a lot of protests were going on. I was figuring out where I fit into all of it as someone who was not really politically active. I'd started reading Baldwin and really getting into Hurston and all those things in college. Yeah. But like now I was like really suddenly feeling that kind of, not weight, but just the power and how much of my experience had been lived. And I thought about what it was like to now suddenly feel like a Black person moving through the world, knowing who I was, knowing how I talked, all those things, but knowing other people would just look at me and see a Black person and what that would mean if they're a cop. What would that mean if they were a white shop owner?
You were evolving and that's okay. You were evolving.
Exactly.
And coming into your own. And you were able to sort of express that in ways that felt good for you at that moment.
It did. And that led to me watching a Black Panther documentary, the one by Stanley Nelson.
And it's fabulous. It's really
so good. And Kathleen Cleaver is talking about natural hair. And in that moment, she's talking about why they wear it natural and how it's pleasing to them. And I just remember thinking, my natural hair was never before pleasing to me. And weeks, months, I'm not sure how much longer after, I decided to chop all my hair off. I went to a Dominican barbershop in Williamsburg or Bushwick, I can't remember, and had it chopped off. And it was the best experience of my life. And so I really wanted to explore that.
Like it was really empowering for you. It pains me when I hear you say that it wasn't what you wanted for yourself. It wasn't how you saw yourself in that way. And so this inflection point that was created that allowed you to have this sort of freeing moment sounds like it was quite pivotal for you.
It was so pivotal. And this is to say, people, women relax their hair for their own reasons. Like, do you? I get it.
But I know for me, I wasn't doing it for the right reasons. When I cut my hair off, I felt part of this community. I just felt so beautiful. And so that was
beautiful. You are beautiful.
Thank you.
Inside and out. And I'm so pleased that you feel the energy of your beauty and that you're manifesting that in the world. And hopefully it encourages and inspires others to see their beauty as well. And that's what it's really all about, right? Like when I had my short, relaxed do, like I was rocking that and I love that style. And now that I have braids, natural look, you know, I love that too. And so it's really about being unapologetically you. And your book helps people explore the importance of that. You know, when I was a little girl, I loved the Afro puffs girl. Like I would just rock those and think that they were so beautiful. But I too struggled with fitting in when I was in a mostly white environment, given how my hair looked in comparison to theirs. But today's a different day. And I think how we see beauty, express beauty and power and our agency has evolved. And you are a manifestation of that evolution in a way that gives me a great deal of pride and hope about the future.
Thank you. You're going to make me tearing up just listening to you.
I just love that. I just love it. So I'm going to ask us to kind of pivot a bit because you've talked a lot about Nella and Hazel and their story is so compelling, but there's also a male character in the book that I'd like to explore. And he wasn't my favorite, by the way. Wagner, their white male boss. You know, he tries to come across as an ally, right? But clearly he isn't. And you described him as engaging in opportunism disguised as open-mindedness, right? There's so much to unpack in that. So why was it important to include Richard in the story? And how do we encourage authentic allyship at work?
Yeah, so Richard was a few things.
Richard was a whole lot of things.
Yes. He came out of my own kind of idea of like the publishing white male prototype, the people who are able to just kind of coast through, didn't really have, I mean, he started this publishing house from scratch, had no experience and is now successful present day in the book. So he represents that kind of entitlement.
To me, he represented entitlement and privilege on stage.
Yes, definitely privileged.
And coming off in this way of right, being an ally, being helpful.
That also came from, I mean, so people ask me, did you write this book 2020 or with 2020 in mind? And I was like,
no, it's from years and years of being set up, feeling like we're, we as Black people, people of color are getting close to having change. And then, you know, from all the companies tweeting about things and, okay, well, we're going to put this Black person here. We're going to do this initiative now. And then everything goes back to normal. All of those waves over and over again. Richard really represents just another wave of, oh, well, we have to look good. We have to make money because diversity is in vogue. Those are the kinds of thinking that I think are unfortunately very prevalent.
And a lot of it is cosmetic.
A lot of it's performative.
Right. The word I was going to use was performative. Richard represented the challenge I've certainly put out to folks. It cannot be just about statements. It needs to be about action and progress and outcomes.
Exactly. Exactly. And just through Richard, I mean, Nella, when we start off the book, Nella is kind of intrigued by him and is drawn to him because he is this man of power. But what's beneath that, right? A lot of that is, it's so, again, unfortunately prevalent today and people who seem like they mean well, but are actually part of causing the systematic problem. But also I didn't want him to be the only person culpable in this book either, because I think just blaming it on the white man at the top, he's a huge part of it and has so much hand in why the industry, their Wagner books and the book industry and the book are so problematic at the core. But the things that he's doing are not only harming people like Nella, they're harming a lot of other people as well.
And I think when you see someone like Richard, you also appreciate somebody who is doing it right, right? Like when I saw Richard, I was like, well, thank God he's not my boss. When I think about my boss, who is Target's CEO, Brian Cornell, like he's doing the opposite things that I saw Richard doing, right? And so it also does allow us to talk about what is possible and yes. What you don't want to see in both leaders and in companies. There are alternative paths. And so we can't use Richard as an excuse to do the wrong thing. There are pathways that do lead to real outcomes, real work being done that, you know, again, that has to be sustained over a multi-year time horizon to have the kind of impact that we actually want and deserve in this country and around the world. But man, Richard made me hot, girl.
I know, with his silly hats.
Made me hot. So I think we've intrigued our community here at the conference, and they're going to want to read about Nella and Hazel and Richard. But I think they're also going to want to read about just, again, these wonderful relationships and the tensions in these relationships that you explore. And building on this theme of support, it's just really important, I think, for women to support other women. And yet we're often put into these situations where we're compared and forced to compete with one another in ways that are, I don't know, detrimental and unhealthy, like Nella and Hazel were in many ways. But your book also explores really supportive and affirming relationships like between Nella and Malika. So what can we learn from these relationship dynamics that you can share with us?
Yeah. I love that too, because I was thinking in my head, I was like, you know, the other Black girl is part cautionary tale. Like, don't be like Richard, don't be like ABC. But I also wanted it to be the core to be relationships and uplifting one another and why that is still so important. And Malika really came from a lot of my own relationships with my Black friends that I found in college, thankfully, and then have still today. And it's just so important to have that space. We're talking about being your full self at work. You know, is it possible to ever do that? Maybe not, depending on where you are, but you need to have that base. You have to have that foundation of someone to say to you, you know, you are not crazy. You are so right. I hear you. I see you. You can be your weird, wacky self, referencing all these things that nobody else at your job's heard of. Like, I am a safe space. And I had that part of when I started writing this book at my cubicle. I messaged my good friend, my MFA friend, Black friend on Hangouts or whatever, and told her about my idea for this book. I still have a screenshot of it. She was like, yes, girl, dude, I love this. And like, we're just like talking about it.
Right? Like,
Exactly. And sometimes, you know, I think especially over the last couple of years, you have to be really proactive about doing that. There are groups out there. I know Slack had a Black Girls in Publishing group. I'm hoping there's one for every BIPOC person, and also just like women working in tech.
And if there isn't one, for whatever it is you need, particularly for those folks listening to our conversation, we should feel empowered to create that community. Yes. And I'm really blessed to be a part of a group of women we call the Mocha Moguls. And the Mocha Moguls are 10 Black women who are, you know, executives in corporate America and very different industries all across the country, different life stages. But I'm also connected inside of Target to this amazing group of women called Sisters Connecting. And we're there to lean on and lift up one another. I'm also an Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority and a member of the Links organization. So there are these varying spaces where I am able to both get and give support. And so I think whether it's individuals or through a collective, there are places and spaces that either exist or, and if they don't exist, we create them, right? The table's not there and the chair's not there. We either bring up our own chair or create our own damn table.
I loved what you said about bringing up your own chair, like starting that group. That's the most important thing too. And I didn't have that kind of chutzpah, for lack of a better word, when I was working in publishing. And I wish I had, but there are so many people around me who did, and, you know, in other industries. And it's so important to use your own voice and to start those initiatives yourself. So I love that. Thank you.
Well, we're in this together. We're in this together.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes.
Zakiya, what do you hope that readers will take from your book?
So many things. I mean, the conversations about hair that I've been having with non-Black women have been wild and so interesting, of what people are Googling and didn't know. And I mean, I didn't write this book to teach necessarily. I'm happy and so happy that these kind of conversations about workplace inclusivity, all of those things are happening. But I was really just writing it for that kind of blurred in me who loved Insecure when it came out and loved all the different kinds of Black people that I was seeing in Insecure and Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl and Key and Peele, all of those things. So I'm just excited for this to present 4, 5, 6 different ways to be a Black person in this world. Like, we are not homogenous. We are so different. We were saying earlier, Kendra Ray has her reasons for doing things. Diana has her reasons for doing things. Hazel, we are just, we're each unique and we all deserve to be heard and seen. But I also want this book to be fun. Like the Malaika conversations, I wanted that warmth as well. And so just hopefully, just a few things, you know.
It's a really interesting story. It is a story that has a range of storylines and emotional highs and lows. And so I do think that people will be really engaged and taken on an interesting journey as they dive into the book. So I don't want to give it all away, but you did a beautiful job with your first novel. It's really quite extraordinary, and the best is yet to come, I'm sure. So before we close, I want to ask you to reflect on the theme of this conference, which is renew, reconnect, reignite. What have you discovered that helps you renew, reconnect, and reignite that can inspire us throughout the year?
Yeah, I mean, mine isn't so much of a tangible thing, but I think for me, just allowing myself more grace of, you know, I really was not able to read as much last year as I wanted to because the book was happening and promoting, and I'd be like, ah, I should be reading more. I should be doing, be on social media more, all those things. And really just taking it one day at a time and knowing how much I can do and really connecting to what makes me happy. And now I am doing that and I'm getting back into reading at my own pace and I'm listening to music and really thinking about music. And that sounds spacey, but all of those things, that's like really just being patient with myself and mindful of what's coming in. So yeah.
I love that. It feels almost like it's a call to self-care and well-being.
Yes.
And self-care is so essential. And so I'm inspired by what you shared. And I'm sure that our audience will be able to really think about that and apply that in their lives as well. So, you know, I'm just energized, Zakiya, by our conversation. This has been absolutely amazing. And, you know, I often say
that the true measure. It's just so inspiring to me.
Oh,
so.
Stop. You know, I do often say that, you know, the true measure of our success would be how we use our influence and our voices and our power to create more equitable opportunities for everyone, especially women and girls. And I just feel like your book does a phenomenal job of elevating that discussion. So thank you so much for that. I'm just really looking forward to following your journey.
Thank you so much, Leigh. This was a dream and such a pleasure. I really, really appreciate it.
We hope you enjoyed this special episode featuring the 2022 California Conference for Women session with Zakiya Dalila-Harris and Laisha Ward, the EVP and Chief External Engagement Officer for Target, which is the national lifestyle sponsor of the Conferences for Women. To learn more about Zakiya and her work, visit ZakiyaDalilaHarris.com and be sure to visit the conference bookstore. You can purchase The Other Black Girl at conferenceforwomen.org. The Conferences for Women is the largest network of women's conferences in the nation. They draw more than 55,000 women and men to annual events in Boston, Philadelphia, Austin, and California, and, as of late, online. I'm Celeste Headlee, and this is Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. Thank you so much for listening. Be kind and be well.